Accession number 20609, Reel 3.
How do you treat your Reel 3?
We were 400 yards from shore, or 400 metres, whatever you would like, and there was such a crash on our boat, and a shell had hit amongst all the chaps that's what waiting to go off the boat. And they were laying there, they were wounded, they were dead. And as a matter of fact, we had 23 casualties on our boat. There was 11 dead and 12 wounded. When we was getting closer to shore, the Matlows were ready to push the ramps down, and there was blood everywhere. There was blood everywhere, and there's no doubt about it. It was thick. When the Navy blokes were going to push the ramp down, there was another shell hit us, but that was on the forehead, and it killed all four Matlows. And as a matter of fact, they were decapitated, every one. So I would think it was an airburst. Every one of those Matlows got killed. Then we had one of our officers and three other sergeants was ready to push the ramps down. Now, these people are not used to pushing the ramps down, not used to it at all. And they pushed the ramps down. Once the ramps went down, they was all twisted and turned, and oh God, I was in a state. But we had to walk through this blood on this boat, and it was really running over the deck. It was in a terrible state. And as I was getting off the boat, or going to get off the boat, I spoke to one of my friends there, Jasper Higby. And I said to him, "How are you, Jasper?" So he says to me, "How am I, Tom? How am I?" He said, "I reckon I've broke both my legs." He said, "I can't get up, I can't walk." So I said, "Oh, well." I said, "I'll see you when I arrive back, like when you arrive back, like when we all..." So he said, "Yeah, that's all right." He said, "I can't get over this, off this boat." Then there was our Donner, Herbie Seabrook. And he says to me, and he joined up with us, by the way. And he says to me, "Tom," he says, "I've got to get down that ramp with this motorbike." He said, "How am I going to get down that ramp?" So I said, "I don't know, Herbie." So he says, "What can I do?" I said, Throw the bike over the sides, like that. I said, "Pick one up on the beach." He said, "Don't be silly." He said, "I can't do that," he said. But anyway, he got it down. He got it down a ramp, and we managed to get down a ramp. But when we got down on that beach, the beach was, oh, that, there was blokes laying dead. They was dead in the water, and you've never seen anything like it. These East Lancs and East Yorks, they went in before us. And oh, that was in a terrible state. It was in. And as we landed, there was shelling us, there was machine gunning us, everything. They were throwing everything at us. And I tell you, it was absolutely bedlam. But our orders were, get off the beach as soon as you possibly can. So what we did, there was a white tape where they got rid of the mines. We ran up this white tape, and we got onto the shore right on the top, on the promenade, and we looked for the casino. The casino was there, exactly as we'd seen it on the maps, and exactly as we'd seen it on the models. We got there, and then we had to make our way to... Oh, and Bill Millen at the time was piping us ashore. He was piping on the beaches ashore, and he was playing his pipes. So we had to make to a big copse, so that we can reassemble, yeah. And we had to get there. We were reassembled. And what happened then was we went past a casino, and we had to go through a swamp. It was knee-deep, that's all. But the Germans had flooded this area, these fields. They flooded it to try and stop our advance. But we had to go about, I should imagine, about 800, 900 yards across this swamp to get to this copse. So anyway, as we was going across it, they was throwing all shells over us. And what they was doing, they was hitting these swamps, but wasn't causing much damage. because it was going into the swamp, bursting, and all there was a lot of water. So really and truly, they didn't do themselves no good, the Germans. So we was lucky that way. But we assembled at our cops and got ready, and the orders were, make for the bridges as quickly as possible. Now, that was about a 7 mile, 8 mile, 8 mile march, and that had to be a fast march to get to the bridges. So we got in order. So I think 6th commander was leading, 4th commander was at a place called Wistrom. They were taking Wistrom with the French commandos, and 3 commandos in front of us, and 45 followed on. And anyway, to lead us away, Bill Millen was piping. It was piping all the way, Bill Millen. And anyway, we're making our way to the bridges. We got to the bridges, and I think we was a couple of minutes late. So Mr. Lord Lovey, he apologised to the airborne. We're very, very sorry that we're late. We're very sorry that we're late. You know, what is the next thing we've got to do? And the airborne, they said, we've never heard the likes of it. You coming round that corner with a pipes playing. He said, it was brilliant to listen to you come in, like, you know. And our job was to get across the bridges and take the high ground, the plain, the high ground. And that meant going across the bridges. The bridges were intact. We knew that because we was carrying dinghies, collapsible dinghies, so we dumped them. And our job was to go across the bridges and capture the high ground at the Le Plain. What we did is we had to get across, and we was under heavy sniper fire. And as we were going across this bridge, the Pegasus Bridge, the bullets were pinging on the bridges, ping, 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 like, you know. But we were ducking a little bit low so that they couldn't hit us. And we got across that bridge. And then the next bridge was another small bridge and another canal. But that wasn't covered at all. We didn't have no cover at all. We had to go through that with no cover. And there were snipers sniping at us. And on the second bridge, our colonel got hit. He got hit in the legs and he got wounded. And we lost him. They sent him back to the bridgehead. And anyway, we got across. And then we had to make for our orders then were to make for Merville batteries and make sure they had been taken by the 9th Para. And also Franceville La Plage, we had to get that. So went through a place called Salinelles. We formed up, went down the road, went through a place called Salinelles. When we got to Salinelles, okay, not much opposition we didn't have at all. Until we came round a bend. And then we found it. We got shot at, something terrible, like, you know, just round this bend, they was waiting for us. But we soon sorted that out. We come back, we went through, we pushed them off, and we got through. We went to the Merville batteries, and on the night time, I went into the Merville batteries with a troop from B troop, with one of our sections. I went into the Merville batteries to make sure they'd been cleared. I went into the batteries, and there was coats hanging up, there was things hanging up, there was mugs on the floor, there was paper all over the show in the batteries where the 9th Para had taken it. But nobody there. So we come out, that was okay. We went into the village, and that was all right, into Merville village. We pulled out of the village, come out again, went back through Salinelles, because we was ordered back. Then we got the order. We got to go to Salinelles, take Salinelles, go through Salinelles, take Franceville La Plage, then go down to the Merville batteries, then Merville village, which had been bombed by the RAF. So away we go through Salinelles, no opposition. Got to the Franceville La Plage, and there was a main road going, and then we called that Piccadilly. And what happened is, E and B troop were forward troops, one each side of the road, going up this Piccadilly. And behind us was A troop and C and B troop. C troop was in reserve. So we was walking up Piccadilly. and you know, but we was coming under fire, like, you know, but it wasn't very bad at the time. And then A troop went through us, and D troop went through the other troops, and all of a sudden they hit the attack. The attack hit them. A troop really got a thrashing, like, you know, because we were lucky enough that we could have got that, but A troop went through us and got a real thrashing. But they managed all right. They done good. Derek went off sniping. I had to go off sniping, doing a little job. But we was in individual troops then, so we were sniping on our own while the things are going on. We took Franceville, and the reason we had to take Franceville is because the Germans were trying to infiltrate right down our side to get to the Amphreville, which 3, 4, and 6 commando were. They were trying to infiltrate our lines, and by us stopping the Germans, they saved, because they was going to attack Amphreville in force. But we took some of the force off of the Amphreville attack, so that they held Amphreville. We took Franceville, and then we had to go back. Once we took Franceville, we had to go down to the Merville village. So then when we got down to the village, we was being attacked. A troop would be an attack, E troop was being attacked, B troop. Oh, we was in a terrible state, and we was in a state. We was being attacked all round. We was being cut off slowly, slowly being cut off. But C troop done the trick again. They saved our skins. I was sent out sniping. I was down the main road, looking down the main road, and I was watching them, and I could see the Germans running across the road, like the main road. They were doing things like running across the road, and I took a few shots at them. I probably shot a few, but I don't know, because you know, they fall down, but they might have crawled the rest of the way, so we couldn't actually see. But anyway, I was behind this tree. I was behind a big, it was a plane wood tree, it was a big tree. I was behind this tree because I thought to myself, it's no use trying to put camouflage on, it's a waste of time. So anyway, we had a big fight there, and it was going into late evening, and my sergeant come round to me, and he said to me, Tom, I said, yeah, Sergeant Major. So he said to me, we're in trouble with ammunition. He said, I think it's going to be last man, last round. I said, do what? So he said, last man, last round, Tom. He said, I think that's what it's going to be. So I said, okay. And we got our wounded in a shed, with German wounded as well, in a barn, and our blokes were looking after them. But later on, the order come through, make your own way back to the unit's lines in Amphreville. And I thought, God, thank God for that. Like, and the Germans were really giving us an hammering. They were giving us hammering. So anyway, on the night time, late at night, we went, we moved out, and we were making our way back to the Amphreville, to our lines in Amphreville, the brigade lines. But we did the same system as we did going up Piccadilly. Troop, jump in a troop, jump in a troop. You understand what I mean? As one troop drops back, the other troops take over, and they took it in turn to lead. All the way back to, I think it was about 3 miles to Amphreville. And as we left Merville, the Germans slaughtered it with mortars and shells, and they were going in. You could hear the machine guns going, like, you know, but there was nothing there. All we left there was the wounded with a medical officer. So we made our way back to our lines.
So that officer didn't mean you ought to go as individuals to serve yourself?
No. What it meant, one man, the last man, last round, is we fight to the finish until your ammunition runs out, and that is it. But anyway, we made it. So we got to we managed to get to Amphreville, and when we got there, Lord Lovett says that 45 Commando should go into the church and rest, have rest in the church. And we did. We had rest in the church for 24 hours. And then we had to go down and sort some lines out and get our dig in. And we dug in behind 3 and 6 Commando. We were behind them. But where we were dug in was next to where the airborne landed their gliders. And we dug in. And when we dug in, we settled down, and there's still little bullets come flicking round as they were still firing at us, like some bullets were coming over to us, like. And one of our officers said, well, we've got to send a patrol out to the back to make sure the copse is clear at the back, where the airfield is, where the gliders have landed. So they said, well, hello, A section. Sergeant Lee, you take your section out and clear, if necessary, the area, if there's anybody there. So they said to me, righto, Tommy, they said, your sniper, your support, I was in support, you see. And they said, you go with them. So I said, all right. So I went with the section. We took our brain guns and things like that. But, so we got to this little area and this copse. So I went to the edge of the copse, around the corner, and it was quiet, like. So anyway, they set their brain gun up in a little gully over a 5-bar fence. They went over there and set the brain gun up, and we all set ourselves around in different positions. And all of a sudden, we started getting mortared. I thought, oh, God, we was getting mortared. And it was the mortars were coming right along this gully. So somebody must have seen us go there. They was coming along the gully towards the brain gun. They was coming along, so I thought to myself, and I went round the side of a bush, and I see 3 Germans. I thought, right. I brought one down, and the other one ran away, and I hit the other one, but I think he got away anyway. But I did bring one down. And then after that, I went back to our section, and this Sergeant Lee had a badly wounded in the foot. He couldn't walk. So I said, well, I said, we can't do nothing for him. I said, shall I take him back to our lines? So the corporal there said, yes, Tom. He said, can you take him back? I said, yeah. So I got him over my shoulder. He was only a little bloke. I got him over my shoulder. I gave him a fireman's lift, and I took him back to our lines. So I gave him to Lieutenant Riley, who was in charge of our section. So he said, all right, Tom. He said, leave him here. He said, I'll get the medics down on him. He said, go back, tell the corporal to get them to pick their weapons up and come back to the lines. See? So I said, okay, fine. I went out, got the corporal, told him, get all your weapons, bring back. So they had to get over the 5-bar fence, get their brain gun, and we come back to the lines. We settled in our lines. And from then on, they suddenly decided that they wanted a sniping section, a brigade sniper section. So we were brigade. So they said, right, Tom, you go to A troop, where Derek Capebread was. That was his troop. So I see Derek. He said, what are you doing here, Tom? I said, I've come to your section. I'm a brigade sniper now. He said, oh, are you? So I said, yeah. So he said, all right, he said, you can come in the slit trench with me. So we were both in the same slit trench. And it was absolutely, absolutely brilliant, like, because I knew him, and I knew his way of sniping, because I'd been out with him before. And we got this slit trench. So anyway, we used to get picked nearly every day to go out to Longmead Farm to observe and snipe. We went out to Longmead Farm. The officer, Lieutenant Sir Main, he came down to our slit trench and he says, right, Capebread tree chap, he says, I want you to go through 3 commando lines out to Longmead Farm. I want you to observe what's going on out there, observe the road, because we'd like to shell the roads, you know. And he said, if any targets come up, you shoot to kill. So we said, yes, okay. And we made ourselves up, we camouflaged ourselves. And I always had to put brown on my face because my forehead used to shine a lot. And a sergeant said to me one day when I was sniping, he said, you get your forehead dirty. He said, otherwise they're going to get you. He said, because I can see you miles away. My forehead used to shine, I used to sweat, see. So I always used to make sure I was, and I always wore a pair of gloves for shooting. They were the kid gloves, very soft, and that saved my hands showing. I usually use kid gloves. So anyway, Derek and I used to go out to Longmead Farm. He used to get in one position, I used to get in another position, and we knew exactly where one another were all the time. So if anyone got in trouble, we knew what we was doing of. But then, say, late at night, we used to come back to our lines, report to the intelligence officer what we'd seen, what we'd done, and he used to take note of it. So that was brilliant, like, you know. But this happened, we was in line, in static lines for 83 days in Normandy. We could not get out, and the Germans couldn't push us back. So it was, we were stuck. So anyway, this is what Derek and I had all the time, backwards and forwards to the farm, Longmere Farm, and we was doing all this real sniping. But we got quite a good tally, like, you know, from the sniping side of it.
Do you remember any individual instances of success in the sniping?
Well, yeah, I do remember an instance. We was out sniping one day, and the Navy was going to shell the crossroads. We didn't know at the time. So we was out in our positions, and we see a bloke come out. Treacher, Cape Brig. Derek says to me, who's that, Tom? I said, oh, I don't know, like, you know. So he says, we better get up and find out, like. So we went over to the runner. They call them runners then. So we said, what do you want out here? He said, we're near the German lines. We're not far from the German lines. So he said, there's going to be a shoot on this area in about 2 minutes. He said, you've got to get out quick. So anyway, as soon as we got up to get out, they were shelling, started shelling. And did we run? They were shelling, 15-inch shells were coming over and hitting the crossroads. And that's what Derek and I always said. That, who was it? The runner, never done the 4-minute mile before us.
Bannister.
We said we always done the 4-minute mile before Bannister. That was one of our efforts. And it's true. Then, that was that little incident. Then another time that, when we came back, we went in our lines. And another time, I was called out with Lieutenant Sir Main, and we had to go towards the crossroads to make sure the shells were doing the damage that they wanted them to do. And I took him out to the crossroads, and we had orders not to cross the crossroads. Okay, fair enough, you know. And when we got to the crossroads, it was quiet. It was very quiet. Nothing was about, like, and it seemed so quiet. So Mr. Sermain says, shall we go across there, Tommy? So I said, well, it's up to you. You're the governor, like, you're in charge, not me. So anyway, we went across. We went up by the side of the field. We done our field craft. We didn't walk across the field. We went round the side, which is field craft. So you go round the edges, you don't. So we come to this 5-part gate. It was open. And lo and behold, in front of us, there was 2 dead airborne. They'd been laying there for weeks. They were, oh, God, they was in a terrible state they were. So anyway, he said to me, well, he said, you got your knife on you, Tom? So I said, yeah. So he said, cut their identity discs off. So I said, oh, I'll cut their identity. It was a sergeant and an orderly. I'll cut their discs on. He said, put them in your pocket. So I said, all right, put them in my pocket. And he said, watch out, dive in the ditch. So I dived in the ditch, and he said, there's a German patrol going fast there. And I was only about 50 yards away. and they were walking down the edge of a hedgerow. And I thought, oh, God. So he said, what do you think we ought to do? So I said, well, I said, I think we ought to get back and report it to HQ, sir. So he says to me, yes, it's a good idea, I think, Tom. He said, we'll do that. But we let them go first, because we didn't know when they go down that hedgerow where they was going to come right or go left. If they'd have come right, they'd have caught us. We was there, because they'd have come up through there, you see. But anyway, they'd be left. And we went off, like, you know, we was away. We come out of the field there, left the dead airborne, of course, but I'd got the identity disc. And we come back to the unit, you know, back from Longmead Farm, and reported there was two dead airborne there, and intelligence and things like that. And that was another incident with me, like sniping. So,
you said that Mr. Cakebread had his own technique of sniping. Was it the same as yours?
Oh, yes, yes. We both had the same technique, because we were two brigade snipers. We were top snipers, you know. And as a matter of fact, Derek's got his name written up in a book, March Past, and also Clash by Night. I don't know if he told you that, did he?
No, but Mr. Wicks did.
Yeah, well, he has. And he's, I think he had 32 kills, something like that. But anyway, he was a good shot. Derek was a good shot.
How near did you have to get to the Germans before you could snipe them?
Oh, we could snipe at them for a couple of hundred yards, no problem. Our telescopes were so good that we could shoot a couple of hundred yards. That was no problems at all, the their lines.
But it had to be broad daylight.
Oh, yes, because we very rarely went out at night, funny enough, because Longmead Farm, we knew when we got at Longmead Farm that somebody had been there. But what used to happen, we think, is that the Germans used to occupy it in the night time. But we occupied it during the daytime. And you've got to realise we're in no man's land. We were in no man's land. That little bit in between, it was no man's land. So that I think that they didn't want to occupy it during the day, but we did, and they didn't want, you know, we wanted to do the other way. But we knew they'd been there. You could tell the Germans had been there, like, you know. They could probably tell we'd been there as well, so.
Would you ever come across German snipers?
No, I've never come across a German sniper. No, never. No. No.
Which part of the body did you aim at when you were sniping?
The head. I always aimed at the head.
Why was that?
Because it's a cert kill. That is a kill. You can't rely by just hitting them in the chest that it's going to be a kill.
Why not?
Because sometimes you can hit a person in the chest and it doesn't really penetrate. I mean, you might not hit full on in the chest. You might hit him shoulder, arms. But we used to make sure that we go for the head.
But what about?
And invariably we hit it.
Invariably?
Well, we near enough always hit the head.
But what about the helmet?
Never bothered about it. It was the face. The helmet didn't make no difference. It was just the face. You just go aim at the face part. I said the head, but the face, you know.
Would you just fire one shot and then disappear?
Yeah, what we do, we'd fire a shot and then move to another position. We would always move to another position because they could, you know, they could watch and see where that shot come from. But we would move into another position out the way. Yeah. That's what